Yeah, so if you think about it, Daredevil might get hungry because his sense of smell is so powerful that he just can smell his opponent's farts and tell what they just ate. That might be something that he has to deal with
sometimes. I hate to interrupt, but welcome to Hate to Interrupt, episode 26. Sorry, that really threw me for a loop there. Hello, everybody. I am Ethan, otherwise known as Gulif from youtube.com/Gulif. I am joined by
Nick from Stop Culture.
I'm VHS guy, Nick.
Yeah, and so today we have a lot of topics to discuss today. It's going to be like a Hate to Interrupt speed run. We're going to do, like, you know, talk about some of the new superhero TV shows going on right now, like Invincible and Daredevil. Then we're going to talk about the new Bong Joon-ho movie, Mickey 17, and also the 2020, right? Psycho Gorman film. Well, who's the director again, Nick?
Steven Kostansky.
Yeah, that's the one. You know this guy, right? Or you're friends with him?
No, but I would love to be.
I thought you had like some kind of correspondence with him. Like,
no, I've had some correspondence with Brian Taylor, the guy who made the Crank movies.
Oh. Okay. It's Steven DeSantis' daughter that you know. No.
No.
I could have sworn you were like, I know this director's daughter.
No, what I was saying was I was trying to get in touch with Steve Odekirk because I want to interview him really bad. But I couldn't. All of his contact info is like dead because he's like MIA now. So I reached out to his daughter and I was asking you if that was weird to do. So
that's what it was.
It might be weird, but who cares?
It is weird. But anyway,
so do we want to start off on some blind man or some Mark Man?
First, let's talk about. I just want to do a little like a announcement. So I know we did the interview last week with Rendon, and we kind of really enjoyed that format. So what we're going to be doing is kind of trying to bring in guests more often. So we're kind of reaching out to a lot of people that we think are interesting or in similar kind of positions as us on YouTube or bigger, and or maybe even filmmakers in the future. So if there's anybody that listeners y'all want to have on, just shoot us comments in the anywhere you can comment and let us know who you want us to talk to.
Yeah, because our line of thinking was like, if there's any group of people who don't tell everyone what they're thinking enough, it's content creators. So we want to just get them to even talk more about themselves by having them on our podcast to interview them. You guys know what I'm saying?
I think I understand. Yeah. And then one day we'll get stuckmanized with the man himself.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
The dream.
Let's push that.
No, but we just said, you know, to be serious about it, I think it would be cool to really get in depth with content creators and talk about their process, you know, what made them feel like YouTube or whatever, you know, whatever platform they use to make content, what made them feel compelled to do that in their lives, you know, what that means to them and how they go about doing it. So we want to start getting into that sometimes on the podcast. So hopefully you guys will enjoy it. But anyway, Daredevil.
Let's get into some Daredevil BA. What is all of our history with the Daredevil series? Were you guys day oneers?
I was a day oneer.
I was 2016.
It started in like 2015, I think. Right, 2015 to 2018.
Somewhere
I think it was.
There. I was really excited when it first came out. I really loved a lot of the shows. Like, I liked Jessica Jones a shitload the first season. I liked all the Daredevil seasons, and I liked the Punisher. The Punisher was good too.
I've never actually watched any of them besides all three Daredevil seasons and the Defenders, which I thought was kind of bad. The Defenders.
Stinky.
I think everybody kind of thought that was bad. I gave up on all of the Netflix shows because Daredevil came out and it was kind of this really cool, like, oh, this is the Marvel stuff. This is the stuff they're not allowed to do in the movies. Like, it's really R-rated. It's kind of gritty. It's really cool. And I was super into it. And then, you know, season two came out. And of course, as all good things, they have to make more and more and more. And then they started doing all the shows. I got through season one and two. And then I think season three, there was a gap of like four different shows that came out between that were all tied in. They're not really, but they were all in the same Netflix universe. So I just kind of dropped off. But I saw the first two seasons of Daredevil and then I saw Punisher. And that was kind of it.
Yeah, well,
I would like to watch three.
You at least like have to know what happens in the Defenders miniseries to know what the hell is going on at the start of Daredevil season three. which is kind of rough. But I mean, honestly, I don't know. It's not really a huge deal. Like I was just having this conversation with my brother and my friend because he wants to watch Born Again, and my friend is like a more of a completionist about Daredevil. He's like, you have to watch all three seasons of Daredevil, then you need to watch The Defenders. I mean, it would probably help to watch Jessica Jones and Luke Cage too. I was like, dude, you're just overwhelming him with like content homework, and it's not going to go well.
You can't forget Iron Fist.
Oh, yeah, fucking Iron Fist too. But I don't think it's necessary at all. Like. I mean, no, as long as you have like a cursory knowledge of what Daredevil in this iteration is, I feel like that's all you really need.
Well, I mean, the superhero stuff isn't that deep. I mean, you can fill in the blanks with what they're saying in the first couple episodes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it enriches your viewing experience to know what particularly like Wilson Fisk's background is. I think he stands out of all the live action Marvel, you know, adapted villains as probably one of the one with the most depth, I would say, mm-hmm. out of everyone that's ever been on screen. I mean, would you guys think so?
It's that, and also Marvel has a really bad track record of killing every single villain they have, so it's rare that we get one that's been around for a while and has actually developed over time.
Yeah.
Well, what do y'all think about a big thing I've always thought is these shows are good because they aren't, I know they're technically canon within the Marvel universe, but they were pretty hands off with the creation of these shows. Like, these are pretty independent shows from Disney as far mm-hmm. as I'm aware. And they felt that way. They had a completely different tone and feel from all of the Marvel movies.
Well, I read this book called, I think it was called like The Reign of Marvel Studios. And a big part of it is the conflict between the people who ran Marvel Entertainment, which is like Ike Perlmutter. He was more of in control of like the Marvel Netflix shows. And then, Kevin Feige, who obviously is MCU, but like from Kevin Feige's perspective, I don't think he had necessarily a problem with how the Netflix shows were being run. I think it was more that he didn't really have control over them because it was like a different branch of Marvel. So it was always this weird gray area of like, is it canon? Is it not canon? And no one was ever really sure. I'm pretty sure like once they made the Fox deal and they decided to loop Daredevil back into the MCU proper, I'm pretty sure that he was like, okay, I'm just going to say it's canon so we can just use that all as backstory for the new shit. You know,
they make references to like the Avengers and stuff in some of these shows. Like,
they're very vague about it. They're like, do you remember the New York incident? But they never go as far to be like, do you remember the alien invasion where a guy from Viking mythology came in here with a spear?
They do make some comments like that. They talk about Thor and his hammer, and like Foggy in season one's like, what do you think, I'm Captain America or something? Like, they make little kind of connective tissue jokes to remind people that this is supposedly happening in the MCU. But it's like, I don't know, it's when it gets to the point of like the Defenders, when there's a huge like city ending crisis that logistically would be an Avengers level threat if the entire city of New York where Tony Stark lives is like about to fall to pieces or whatever, and like fall into a giant hole or something where there's a bunch of dragon bones.
Oh, is that the Defenders story?
Yeah, sorry. It's
spoilers.
It's very stupid.
I need to know what happens to the dragon bones.
Yeah, it's like connected to Iron Fist or whatever. But anyway, my point is, it's like when you start getting, it's sort of the thing that happened in the Penguin. Like when it gets too grand scale for this character study type story, you start to lose that suspension of disbelief. It's like, why isn't everybody else coming on board? You know, because Tony Stark should be involved with that, you know, at that point.
Yeah, that's a big part of like whenever I made my like Hitman videos, like I was like, they need to keep the story smaller. Like, I think they're doing a pretty good job of that with the Peacemaker. Like, it wasn't a massive, like, I don't know, it didn't feel like a massive worldwide threat, you know, and it made sense that he was the one handling it.
Yeah. And it's all it takes is, for Peacemaker specifically, it's like, it's just set in the middle of nowhere out in the, you know, in the South. That's it. Or I don't know, I know where it was set.
I think it's set in Washington, actually.
Oh, yeah, it's just in some town in Washington. Yeah,
any town in USA. That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the vibe. But yeah, so I as for like the Netflix series of Daredevil, I think season one is very good. Season two kind of fell off for me. And season three is actually like one of my favorite things that the MCU has ever done. I really, really like season three of Daredevil.
I think that season two is the weakest out of the two I've seen. So out of one is way better. But I will say, I think the first half of season two is better than season one. Because the first half of two, that whole Punisher arc is so genuinely like good. Mm-hmm. And then it gets onto all the ninja stuff, and I don't really care about any of that.
Yeah, I think season two was good. It was just kind of a mixed bag. It's definitely still 100% worth watching as like a when you're just getting through the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for Punisher alone.
Charlie Cox is just so great as Daredevil. I find it so impressive how he can just appear to be genuinely blind, just the way his face looks. Yeah.
He's really good at playing blind.
Yeah.
So like, okay, I hate the new show so far. But let's talk about like what do y'all think?
I definitely don't. I don't really understand why you hate it so far. Like what's so offensive about it to you?
It's mostly a visual thing. I would say like maybe like 50% visual thing. I think there's a lot of over reliance on like green screens and what's the fucking the LED screen. Yeah, there's a bunch of volume shots in there that are just hideous. A bunch of CGI like on the characters. There's no wide shots in any of the fights. Like that was part of what made the fights so good in the other Daredevil shows. Everything looks so just muddy. When I will say there is in focus so much in the original show.
There is a different feel to it. As soon as you get that first scene where he's like, I'll be right back. And then he goes and puts on his little Daredevil suit and swings across the rooftops. I was like, this looks weird. This looks a bit Moon Knight-y, you know? It looks a little floaty CG, which the other one never had because they never were like, they never tried to do any of that. They're like, it'll look ridiculous, so we're not going to do that. But I don't know. I heard there were some really big behind-the-scenes issues. Like, they started shooting... maybe, I don't know if they started shooting or they wrote an entire show and Kevin Feige was like, I don't like this. We got to rewrite and reshoot a bunch of this. So, like, the show got made to two different versions. And I think the current show is kind of a Frankenstein version of both of the shows meshed together. Which is why there are some like genuinely really like some good scenes in here. I think there are some really good scenes in this first episode as well as the second. And then there are some where I'm like, ooh, this just looks like a Disney Plus Marvel show.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It feels like a Disney Plus show.
There's the moment where you first see him in the suit. He does that superhero landing and his body just like moves in a way that someone without superpowers would never move. You know, like when he makes that landing, it's just too fast.
It reminds me of when Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man catches Zendaya and then, like, remember the way he hits the ground and, like, bungee cords up? It's real weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, like, I'm not going to say the original Daredevil's writing was super strong because I don't think the show is super strong. I think if the original Daredevil show didn't have as good of fight scenes as it did, I wouldn't classify it near as good as it is or as I do. But I definitely does seem like there's a step down as far as the writing goes. A lot of are we going to talk spoilers at all? Like, I don't know.
We should.
So yeah, let's go spoilers.
I understand them wanting to get rid of Karen and what the fuck's his name?
Foggy.
That's fine. But there's little things like whenever they get rid of Karen, and then they basically just split her entire personality and like use case into two separate characters. It's just why? You already had one character doing everything that she does. Why do we need two of them now? We have a new love interest and then a new like assistant at his job. And it just feels like there's way too many characters for no reason. I don't know. The Foggy death was kind of looked like shit. It's just ugly. It's ugly, dude.
I don't know. Like, I don't think we know the two new characters well enough to say that they're just like replacing Karen's role in the original series, you know? Like, yeah, one is a love interest and one is like a partner at the firm or whatever, but I don't know. I don't think that we necessarily know enough about them to say either way for sure.
I just wish they would have written them out and been like, they don't exist. And then just start somewhere more interesting.
I think I saw that the leak was even worse than that. Like, they just had Foggy die off screen. They were just like, he died. And then Karen shows up for a scene and leaves. So that if so, we got the better, we got a better version.
Well, like
that,
also whenever, like, I just hate whenever, like, the contrived, like, conflict where it's, it doesn't make any sense. Like, why is she upset at him? Why is she leaving? Like, it from what we saw, there's no reason she would be acting that way.
I mean, Foggy got killed right next to her. It was her best friend. They worked together for like 10 years. And considering all the emotional turmoil and like physical danger she's been put in New York City just because of her proximity to Daredevil and Matt Murdock, it's like, I would fucking move across the country too. That makes sense to me. I don't think there's anything wrong with that from a story level.
I lost my friend, so now I'm going to completely cut off my other friend.
Yeah, but no, it's not that though. I mean, it's also just the fact that who's to say that's not going to happen to her? I mean, how many times have Daredevil villains tried to kill Karen Page at this point? You know, she's
that's her fleeing the writers, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say, does Bullseye have like superhuman resiliency? Because he fell off a 4-story building.
He actually does. Yeah.
Okay. Because I was real confused. I went, damn, they just killed Bullseye in the first scene. And then he's just sitting in court. And I was like, he looks fine.
There's
I was
like,
really confused.
There's like something that sort of equates to a post-credit scene that happens at the end of season 3. This isn't like a major spoiler, Ethan, but like he gets some kind of advanced like surgery
injection thing.
Yeah,
he
like,
gets a knockoff superhero serum.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what it does, but that I feel like kind of makes it at least make a little bit more sense that he could fall off a fucking 5-story building and survive. But
well, I don't have much positive to say, but I want to hear what y'all's positives are. What do y'all like about it?
I liked the opening scene. It did not feel as, because they're clearly doing the, Daredevil's Netflix series is known for having a big one take scene fight action or a singular take action scene. And they clearly wanted to open on that. And while I'm like, yeah, it's fine, it definitely is not as well executed as the Netflix versions. It just felt like you're saying, Nick, it felt very ugly and muddy, and like, I don't know, it just felt that it wasn't seamless to me. Other than that, I think it's all pretty fine. I really like where they seem to be going with the political commentary and the whole like dirty cops Punisher imagery, which we can find a lot of in our real life.
Mm-hmm. I do really like I do like the Fisk storyline where he's like was running for mayor and everything. I think that was really interesting.
Yeah.
So I agree.
Yeah, and it's pretty clear that they're setting up Fisk as like a Trump analog. That's pretty obvious because there's all those lines about, oh, like Fisk is shaking things up. Fisk is a businessman. He can change the city. Mm-hmm. He did something big for himself. He can do something big for the city, like all that shit. So yeah, I think that could be handled well. I mean, considering like the MCU's track record with trying to make comments about the real world in their cinematic universe, it might be handled very sloppily. I don't know. But I think just on the face of it, like having Wilson Fisk, who has always been, you know, a psychopath in the Netflix series, but always had like more emotional depth than basically any other villain in the MCU. I think it makes sense for him to be the one that at least seems to be genuinely trying to turn over a new leaf. Like that makes sense to me from a story perspective. It makes sense that the people of New York, if they're anything like the people that live in this current political climate, they would vote for a felon who has a very checkered past and to shake things up because they're a political outsider. Like that makes sense to me. Despite the fact that I think Foggy and Karen were kind of done dirty by just literally being in the first 10 minutes of the show, I think it's kind of at least serving the memory of what those characters meant to the old show and the fan base to have the entire emotional arc of the new series built upon Foggy's death. Like that at least, if you're not going to have them in the show, like at least make that the lowest point of Matt Murdock's life and he has to go from there. Like that's some kind of, you know, it's giving them their due in a certain way.
They could have also given him some kind of honorable death too. Like it was just like, he's just always like, they like killed him right after he's a bumbling nincompoop who hid away information. It's like, okay, the idiot died.
I don't know. Why was he an idiot? I mean, he got tricked by like a psychopath, which can happen to anyone. I mean, first of all, he was doing something that they have done in the Daredevil show like plenty of times. They did it for Karen when they first meet her, and Karen's in danger from whoever the fuck. They stash her away at Matt's house. Foggy was just doing the same thing, and then, you know, Bullseye.
He hid it away from Matt, though.
His reasoning was like, I didn't want to give you an excuse or something, which is in line with his character because he's always been conflicted and mostly negative about the fact that Matt is Daredevil, you know. It makes sense. There's nothing that didn't really line up from a story perspective, and I definitely didn't think it made out Foggy to seem like he was an idiot. I think he just got, you know, he just got played.
I think the whole show kind of makes Foggy seem kind of like an idiot. Like, they're literally making fun of his game like 2 seconds before he died.
Yeah, but that's because he's a doof, not a moron. Like, he's not...
Foggy ain't got no game. He doesn't fuck.
Yeah, but he, I mean...
I'm just kidding. I'm just fucking around.
I don't know. I think Foggy has been portrayed as like a pretty competent character. I think you were saying in the group chat that you've never really thought the acting performance is very strong. I definitely agree with that. And Karen, too. I mean, I'm not sad that they're out of the show because they were always like kind of a liability in the original one. But I guess it's just a little bit. If I was like a major fan of those characters, I might feel some type of way about the way they were handled in the beginning of this one. That's kind of my thing, you know.
Yeah, they clearly wanted Daredevil Born Again to not just so much be season 4 of Daredevil. They wanted this to be a fresh new series that anyone can jump into and not be too confused.
Which is honestly kind of my problem.
Why they made the decision to kill those characters?
Yeah,
it feels very much like they're like, this is not a Netflix show. This is a Marvel show, and it's like, well, people liked it because it isn't a Marvel show.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I think people liked it because it probably mostly because of the things you're talking about like the wonders, the action scenes being much more grounded and gritty and realistic than anything in the MCU. It felt like there was actually thought and care put into the fight choreography and stuff like that.
Set pieces.
Yeah. And I mean, you're saying that the writing isn't that great. I mean, it's not excellent necessarily, but I think it's most certainly, especially in season 3 and most of season 1, I think it's like considerably better than basically anything in the MCU.
I think the writing's good, and I think it's a real shame that they didn't bring back a single showrunner from the original show. Like,
yeah,
why?
Yeah, I think Feige has like a superiority complex about the Netflix shows, and probably he probably doesn't want at this point in the MCU's history where, you know, things are kind of looking down and they've lost a lot of public trust. He probably doesn't want to be seen leaning on people that are probably more beloved by the fan base at this point, you know, showrunners of the Netflix series, because he wants to prove that he can do it on his own without them, you know, and make a better Daredevil show. But I don't know if that's going to be the case.
I think Hubris is going to get him.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much going for Marvel. I think Thunderbolts has an incredible team behind it, and I hope it's good, but that's like the only thing Marvel has as a possibility that could be good anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm excited for Thunderbolts. That actually looks good.
Well, what
and
about
I'll
Fantastic
watch the
Four?
Rest of this. I'll watch Fantastic Four stick.
I'm not as excited as you guys are on it.
I'm not like hyped, but I'm like I'm sure it will at least be like, I'll be like, oh, this is good, you know?
Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure Marvel is like putting a lot of eggs in the Fantastic Four basket right now.
Yeah.
Because if you just think about where the next two Avengers movies are going with Doctor Doom, like he's going to have to be introduced in some semblance in the Fantastic Four movie, probably just a post-credit scene or whatever. But he has the most connection out of any, you know, Doom is connected to the Fantastic Four more than anyone else. So it's like, it's going to have to be, they're going to be a linchpin of whatever this next phase of Marvel is. But I mean, just considering like Daredevil's popularity among the fan base, do you guys think that he's going to play a role in the like Avengers side of things, or is he going to be more of like a bit player in the series?
I would be shocked if he showed up, but I don't think he'll be a big player.
I think it's going to depend on the popularity of the show. And so I know I've been being really negative to it. I'm going to give it the season before I like really decide whether I hate it or not, because maybe it'll surprise me. But I think this show isn't going to come across as that well to people, especially once it's all said and done. So I think they'll probably put it on the back burner as for like the bigger stuff.
I think that Marvel needs to put faith in things that are like tested to be already beloved by audience right now. Like they need to win people's trust back because they made so many mistakes recently. And I think Daredevil, despite maybe not like from a power set basis, fit into like cosmic multiversal story or whatever, I think he's like a beloved enough character, a beloved enough actor that has consistently great performance in the whatever role he's been in the MCU. I think they will make him a big piece of things in the next couple movies, just to drum up support and excitement for the next projects. You know,
yeah, Black Widow and Hawkeye can be on the Avengers, then I think Daredevil can.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe I don't know. I think they already put him into She-Hulk and.
Yeah, he banged She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
good for him.
Spider-Man. He was already in an MCU movie, so
yeah. I'm talking about beyond a cameo. You know,
I was hoping Spider-Man 4 was going to be the Daredevil like mentor movie with Spider-Man, but I don't think that's what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, I don't think they have any more movies to waste. Narrative-wise, like I think now is getting to crunch time where they're gonna have to like really build up what the actual story of the next two Avengers movies are. And if you're gonna have like a big tentpole film like Spider-Man coming up, I think it needs to kind of like center around that sort of plot, or it's kind of like a waste narratively, I think.
Well, because it's set in between the two Avengers movies, right? That's when it's gonna come out, I think. After Tuesday, before Secret Wars, because Secret Wars is next summer, right?
It's Doomsday
is next summer, and then Secret Wars is the year after. So I think the Spider-Man is coming out that December of next year.
Yeah.
How dumb do you think that Marvel feels for getting rid of Jonathan Majors now?
I don't think they feel that dumb. I mean, they were kind of like, well, this is a lose-lose situation.
Yeah.
Is it though? He's already making his comeback.
This is always what happens though. This is just the way of the industry, like, is they fire people that
he was like probably the best actor they had working in the MCU.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, he was good.
But I mean, I don't know. I feel like they probably feel more comfortable with an extremely bankable, like provably successful face in Robert Downey Jr. Like, you know, whatever that says about the actual creative end of things, like financially, I'm sure they feel much more comfortable having secured RDJ to be the main villain. Because it's not like Kang, you know, Majors is a great performer, and I liked his parts and like a shitty movie like Quantumania, and you know, when he came up in Loki, I thought it was good too. But I don't think people were like really super excited to see what he was going to do next. Whereas I think there's at least a lot of buzz around RDJ Doom. I think people want to see what that's going to actually be like.
Well, it's kind of hard to make your big epic villain that is going to fight the Avengers get the shit kicked out of him in an Ant-Man movie. You know,
yeah,
like Thanos was in Guardians of the Galaxy 1, but the Guardians didn't punch him a bunch and make him look like a loser.
Yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. For a Daredevil, I'm definitely a little bit higher on it than Nick is. I feel like I really just, you know, if that conversation that Fisk and Daredevil had in the little diner is anything, you know, if we can expect more of that to come in the season, I'll be like pretty satisfied with it. I thought that the writing of that scene was really well done. I think those two actors have a lot of chemistry together. And I'm really pumped to see how it all plays out. So.
It's a promising start for sure.
Yeah. You guys want to get into Invincible a little bit?
Yeah. I love this season.
Yeah.
This season is a big step up from season two in my mind, because I feel like season two was very much a filler setup season for this season.
Well, to be fair, they are following the comics pretty closely. Like, I think that's pretty close to how it was in the comics as well. So to call it filler isn't necessarily true, because it's using the
information. It feels like filler.
If it's filler in the comics too, probably, I would assume. right?
Well, no, filler by definition is content that's created that isn't in the source material to fill the gaps.
Okay, it's setup that feels like filler to me.
Okay, that's fair. Well, you could say it's just a setup season. That makes sense.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It, you know,
I mean, to me, filler feels like just weak. Weak narrative, you know. My biggest problem with season two was how much time they kept on spending on like rounding out the B team of like Guardians of the Globe characters, and most of them I mean they made Rexplode a little bit more interesting this season, but like I was just getting very tired of like having to check in with him and fucking Duplicate and the Immortal. By the way, all these fucking stupid ass names. Like Nick, you were saying like it. What were you saying? I was like, are they bad on purpose? And you're like, yeah. But I like, what's the point of that? I don't understand.
It's funny
because Robert Kirkman's just kind of an edgelord. Like that's literally just what it is. He's.
But what is? Why is Duplicate and Multipaul edgelord?
He's. It's similar to how like Garth Ennis is with The Boys. Like he's just poking fun. Like,
yeah,
and he's not like, if y'all have read The Walking Dead, y'all need to read The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead is an amazing comic, but he's just like that. He's just super edgy.
Yeah. Beyond that, my biggest issue with season two, it's like we're gonna compare the fucking amazing ending of season one, which got me so like, made me a lifelong Invincible fan no matter like where the season mm-hmm. the series goes, like just because of that, those last two episodes in season one, I'll always check in with the show, you know, because it can, I know it can get there, but you know, going from that, this like heartbreaking battle between father and son alien hybrids or whatever, and then Angstrom Levy, who's barely even really a character. He's like, there's something that happens with him in the beginning which sets him off against Mark, and then you see him in like minor cameos opening up portals throughout the fucking multiverse or whatever, and then he just shows up in the finale, and I'm like, why do I care? Like, why do I even care who the fuck this guy is, you know? And I understand that he's like, you know, in season three and probably beyond, he'll play more of a role in the story. But it was like, I really didn't appreciate the way they set him up.
I don't think there was, I think that there just isn't really a main like villain arc right now. That's just kind of how it is. I mean, it's all setting up major fights with the Viltrumites, but it takes time to build that up. And Mark also, you have to keep in mind, like, it's all about kind of like building Mark up as far as his actual strength goes in the comic, because he's so much weaker than the Viltrumites. Like, that's a lot of this is just him kind of proving himself and getting stronger. That's at least how it is in the comics.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, I made a video after season two dropped, and my whole thing was like, I just wish that this wasn't a TV show almost. I wish it was like a series of animated films, because I do, like Ethan said, I think a lot of this shit feels like filler. Like in season two, especially. Season three has been better, but I don't think we need to see all of this shit, because like when I think of Invincible, it's not necessarily like the biggest strengths of it. What the selling points are to me, it's not really world building. It's not really like a bunch of side characters that have super interesting lives, because they kind of don't. It's more just the thing about, you know, Nolan and Mark. I like the whole Grayson family dynamic, and I like the Viltrumite or shit. Like that's the real interesting shit, and I would have liked to see a movie series about that.
I do think that the like teen drama shit is the weakest part of it, 100%.
Yeah.
But I also think that is very intentional in the story and very much a part of the comic, and I think it'd be kind of disingenuous to just cut that out. So while I agree with you, it kind of sucks. I think that's just part of Invincible, and that's kind of what you kind of have signing up for.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, though. It's like adapt it into, like, kill your darlings a little bit. Like, not all of this stuff is worthy of being adapted on screen, which is what I started realizing in season two. I was like, especially the Mark, like, keeping the Mark and Amber relationship going that long. I know we're supposed to be talking about season three, which is better.
We'll
but, like, but like, keeping that relationship going for so long was so fucking boring to me. I'm like, I get what they're trying to do with it, but it's just not hitting, you know?
I'm not invested. Yeah.
I agree with you. However, it's a slippery slope. Whenever you start changing things from the source material, you get things like The Boys, you know, where they change so many things that they're like, oh, like we can't follow the story the exact same way as we can't hit this point without making up some weird shit, right? So it's kind of a double-edged sword where, like, it is fucking annoying. I hated the Amber shit, too. I hate like how much time they spend on this season with Mark just kind of self-pitying himself. I dislike those things. But at the same time, it's going to get to the place it's supposed to get, which I know is good because they're following it exactly.
Yeah, you both have read the have you both read the comic series?
I haven't finished it, but I've read a lot of it.
I've read basically everything, whatever the equivalent of season 3 is. I started reading it recently and finished it. So I know everything that happens in the comics, but I didn't read the comics that correspond to the first 3 seasons. You know what I mean?
Okay, you skipped up to where I skipped we
those
were
and I was like, oh, I want to know what happens next. So I just read those.
Yeah, okay. All right. I was just curious on that because I have not read it. How many seasons do you predict this will be when if doing the whole story? Like 7 or 8? That's what I've heard.
I've heard Kirkman say 7 or 8. Yeah. Okay. And that would make sense, I think. Just based on how it's all laid out, you know, comic to show so far. I know like next, for instance, no spoilers, like next episode is going to be really cool. It's just like, I almost appreciate like the Invincible War that just happened in the last episode. I appreciate it more in the comics just with like the still frames, because it's like the animation is just, it's just not really up to snuff, you know. It's not expressive.
Yeah.
It's not emotive. It doesn't really make you feel anything.
This has been a big point of contention. The show.
I think they're saving
the
budget. I think they're saving the budget for the conquest fight. I think the conquest fight's going to look really cool.
That's the thing, is like they'll always have a big fight each season. Like the Omni-Man Mark fight at the end of season 1 looked significantly better than almost every other bit of action. But it does make it to where all the in-between stuff, it's like Mark flying around and it looks like the dragon of PNG of Mark around on a sky background, you know, for a lot of it. I don't know, because they, before season 2 came out, did you guys see that teaser they put out of him and Alan talking in a diner?
Yeah.
The animation for that looks significantly better than anything else in the show. And it was like, they were like, oh yeah, don't worry, season 2 is taking a lot longer because we're building up to it. And then season 2 comes out and it just looks like season 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, that's just kind of the price you pay with animation, man. I mean,
I don't know.
They don't have unlimited money to hire massive
amounts
of animation.
They do. They're Amazon.
But they want to be profitable.
No, but I mean, they decided to, what I mean, it's a double-edged sword, because it's like, yeah, they sunk so much money into getting a star-studded celebrity cast, which I will admit, is literally what made me watch the show. I had no idea what Invincible was, and I was like, oh, this is a show with Steven Yeun, fucking J.K. Simmons, and all these crazy people. I was like, yeah, I'll watch it. I don't even care what it is.
I don't think they need to keep doing that at this point, though, because every character, they just go like, hey, we got Jesse from Breaking Bad to play this guy for an episode. Like, why? That could have been literally anyone.
but I think it's just literally they just want to work with those people. I don't think it's a like a name thing where they're like using it as a selling point. I think they just actually want to work with them.
I mean, using names is always a selling point, though.
Yeah,
yeah, but that's... they weren't throwing Jesse Pinkman in the marketing.
Yeah, no, I'm saying like initially starts just, you know, casting the series regulars, like basically every main character or even like the, you know, primary tertiary characters or whatever, they're all celebrities, you know.
But they're also really good. Like Walton Goggins as Cecil is so good.
Yeah.
He's so cool.
J.K. Simmons is amazing in it. I think they did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one's cast poorly. The only one I'm not sure if they match the voice right now is Conquest showed up at the beginning of last episode, and I was not expecting him to be voiced by
Negan.
Yeah, Negan. I was like, oh, I heard that Doug Bradley and the guy Mike from Breaking Bad were in this, and I was expecting one of those bald guys to play the big bald guy.
So this shit is pissing me off. Like, where they just keep bringing in people who've worked with each other before, like with the Boys season
in the
2,
Boys,
where they're,
yeah.
Dude. Why are they bringing in? I just met Jeffrey Jared Padalecki like a couple months ago.
You're like, I'm
but
sick
why
of
are
it.
They bringing? Why are they bringing in Jared Padalecki? Nice guy,
and
by the
Collins.
Way. But like, why? Why are they bringing these?
Because it's just the same showrunner. They're friends.
I know, but it's so dumb.
Wait, yeah. Jared Padalecki is in. The
He's
Boys,
in season
or...
5 of The Boys.
The Boys and Misha Collins.
Same
from,
with Misha. So everyone's from Supernatural is going to be in The Boys by the final season.
And where was this done in? in Invincible. Are you talking about like how Kirkman hired, you know, Walking Dead alums to be on like the first Guardians of the Globe? Those are like, to me, that's just a little like Easter egg type of things for also, the Kirkmanverse fans.
What's his actual name?
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
I don't think he doesn't match what I think of as Conquest.
Yeah, I was expecting a much deep. I was like, oh, it's going to be Hellraiser. That's kind of sick.
He's
gonna be
old
deep,
as
scary.
Shit. Like, he's old as fuck. Like,
Conquest?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it actually would have been sick to have Mike Ehrmantraut voice Conquest.
That would have been cool.
That would have been great.
Wait, you heard that Mike is going to be in Invincible? He's voicing someone?
Mike, he already did. He voiced Brick or something. It was one of the guys during Invincible War who was like, hey, you guys get out of here.
Oh, Brit. The older guy.
Brit. Yeah. Yeah, that's Mike from Breaking Bad.
Did you guys see Business Baby?
Yeah, I did. That was funny.
I was on the Invincible subreddit the other day, and the entire fan base is in an uproar over the I miss William version of Invincible.
There's a
they're calling him the gay Invincible.
What's the kid from Fifth Element or Sixth Sense? My brain.
Oh, Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah.
Yeah, they keep making this like superhero that looks just like Haley Joel Osment. It's the second episode that they've had just a giant Haley Joel Osment walking in as a superhero.
Speaking of, is in The Boys as well. Haley Joel Osment.
Yes, in The Boys as well.
He plays the Wisp or the something. Mesmer.
Like, yeah, Mesmer.
I have to say, like, my biggest issue with Invincible post season one, which, like I said, I haven't read those comics. I've just read Beyond like an asshole. But I don't know if they're choosing to exclude Nolan or it's just not time for Nolan to have much of a story. But I mean, being up in like the Supermax Viltrumite prison and with Alan the alien and like the Coalition of Planets stuff, like I just wish we were checking in more with them and less on like the Guardians of the Globe, because I just don't really care that much.
Yeah, because if this Conquest fight wraps up and then that's kind of it, we would have gotten what, one major episode with Nolan.
Yeah.
Well, Nolan season. Will be a lot more important next season.
I'm sure he will. Yeah, I'm sure he's just having his depressive state for these last two, but yeah, he's such an interesting character that I want to see
it
more.
It sucks because I feel like a lot of y'all's complaints are just with the comic itself. So it's like
it's just the what they're deciding to tell and omit from the story, not in adaptational terms, but yeah, just in general, like my criticism then.
I feel like if you go in having already read the comic and you kind of know exactly what you're walking into, like you kind of have different expectations. So I don't even know how to match my expectations to y'all's. So I think they're fair though.
Yeah, I mean, whether it's a critique of the show or the comic, really it's just a critique of the story that I've seen so far, that a lot of it isn't really grabbing me. Whereas the first season, I didn't really have those issues. Except for the relationship with Amber, which was just kind of like an annoying thing. For anyone who watched the first couple episodes knew that Mark was going to end up with Adam Eve, and Amber was just like
she was the first girlfriend.
Yeah, she was like an impediment on the road to that for him to like learn something, and it was just like holding on to that for way too long for no good reason. I didn't really appreciate that. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I agree. The teenage drama stuff is weak.
Yeah.
I definitely
do appreciate that. Despite the fact that you see how powerful Invincible is, he's able to go up against all these other evil versions of him and still basically like kind of be the strongest, which makes sense since all of those other people or the other versions of Invincible are on the Viltrumite side, so they don't have to test their strength by fighting other Viltrumites. You know, so like Mark shines through as the strongest one out of all of them, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know?
What's your favorite Invincible copy?
Mustache.
The gay Invincible.
Oh, the gay Invincible.
Yeah, he was the best one.
Yeah.
you have to know, like the fan art is just insane. I saw one of like of William and Invincible, like, you want to go again? And Eve's just on the outside flying like.
I think part of what's frustrating too for like this is like whenever you're reading something, you can just get through it. right? You can just be like, this part's fucking boring. No, I'm going to read this quick. Whereas, like, with the show, it's like, especially for, was it 1 to 2? It was like, what, like 3 years? Just waiting for fucking ever? Yeah, there was a huge
gap between 1 and 2. Now they're doing 1 a year is the plan.
Do you think they'll keep to that?
He said they're going to try, and we'll see. We'll see how much they abuse their animators.
I've accepted the animation by this point. I know it's not going to be perfect. It's
fine.
It's not going to look like an animated film. It's whatever. I just want to fucking see the story, really.
That's kind of where I'm at.
I was sick like a couple days ago, and I rewatched the entire. That's all I did was just rewatch all of Invincible. And you know, despite critiques I have, it's a fucking amazing show. It's still really good.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, let's move. You guys want to do Mickey 17 or Psycho Goreman?
Let's do Psycho Goreman.
All right,
Mr. VHS guy Nicholas. What the fuck did you give us?
So this is a film by Stephen Kostansky, who's like a very low budget filmmaker. He's one of the co-creators of The Void, if y'all have seen The Void, which is a horror movie with like really, really amazing special effects, like practical effects, like very similar to like The Thing. Like people compare it to The Thing. It's like that good.
Okay.
But he's gone on to do his own things, and he makes these little silly movies. Like they're really, really goofy, has a lot of practical effects, a lot of just zany topics. This one's about an alien who basically gets uncovered on Earth by a little girl who finds a little orb that allows her to control him, and she just has a little adventure with a Psycho Goreman, a giant monster that she bakes cookies with and shit.
did any of you guys watch Power Rangers growing up?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. Because as soon as I remembered you said that end of last episode, like it's like Power Rangers, and I went, oh, okay. Now that I know that, or I've remembered that, it's a little more digestible for me, because I was fucking hating this for the first 10 minutes until Psycho Goreman showed up. I was like, the kid acting was horrible. The parent acting was horrible. Everything looks horrible. I hate everyone. And then this stupid ass Power Rangers villain shows up.
Yeah.
I was like, no, this is fun.
There were some funny moments that I appreciated, like the part where the husband's like microwaving food and she's like, you know, you just like ruined our dinner, and he just starts crying. You know what I'm talking about? The husband was a very strange character, and there's a lot of like weird moments like that throughout, just like weird, quirky, non sequitur ass moments throughout the movie that I appreciated. But yeah, generally, I'm sure neither of you are surprised that I did not like this movie at all.
Y'all thought the kid acting was that bad? I don't think it was that bad.
I think this was like, nobody in that, I think if you swapped the roles, like the boy was doing the girl's lines or that character, it wouldn't have mattered, because
the boy could not play the girl, bro. Listen, she was so annoying.
Yeah, listen.
Nobody could be that annoying.
Listen, any kid given those lines and given that direction, they're going to be cringe. That was the whole point. And I was like, I feel bad for the kids, because it was really, really rough. I hated hearing them talk.
Really?
Yeah,
I thought she did a good job. I think it was supposed to be like cringe.
Yeah.
And also keep in mind, this movie had like $100,000 budget. So, and can we talk about like the practical effects? They were really good, right? Am I crazy?
Yeah, I think they were fun.
It looked nice.
I like the effect when he gives his enemies a warrior's death, and then he just like opens into this massive Pennywise chasm in his torso. And yeah, that was pretty fun.
Yeah, I like when he turns the little girl's love interest into like a giant brain ball that plays keyboard.
Alistair.
Dude, the ending. Cool. I know you did. I think you probably skipped the credits. Yeah. I'm sure, but at the credits, like it ends, and he's just sitting at the table with his parents, and they're just eating dinner quietly. Like,
Alistair, dinner's ready. he slumps his way up to the dining room
trying
table,
trying to eat with his little fucking tentacles. It's so good. The movie's just so fun. Like, I feel like y'all maybe went in with like more expectations than you should have.
No, because I didn't have any expectations.
Okay.
I had fun though. No, I'm being negative, but I'm just telling you, I still had fun. I would show this to people at like a party, if I was like, you guys want to see some crazy shit, I'd throw this on at like a Halloween party. I just love how it was just they just kill a lot of people. they're having that little montage scene and that guy's like, nice costume jackass, and he just blows up like an 8-year-old. That was funny.
And the police officer just trying to kill himself after he's been like morphed into like a some zombie monster.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. the Hunky Boys magazine scene was pretty funny too.
Oh, he's like, am I?
Yeah, he's like, I don't care about hunky boys, or do I? That was pretty funny. Yeah, there's funny moments of it. It's just like, I don't know, generally this stuff just like goes in one ear and out the other for me. I just, I don't know. It's really not for me. I can't really get into it that much.
Let's get into that. But instead of talking about the movies, they're like, what we like about the movie, talk about what you didn't like about it. I want to understand what it is that like makes, like what moments in this movie made you check out.
Just starting off with the fact that it's just this crazy psycho Gorman in a orc suit, or what I perceive to be like an orc suit. It's like the tone for me. I can't really get into movies that, it's not that it's, cause you know, I can take a movie seriously that doesn't take itself seriously, but there's like a line for me when it's this ridiculous and schlocky. It's just like, I just don't care. I just don't really want to watch it. And I don't know. It's really just like one of my least favorite genres of film is like stuff like this. And I just,
it felt like a parody at points, you know?
Yeah.
Which I understand is the point.
Well, I think the movie more than anything is just meant to be fun. Like it genuinely felt like they had fun making the movie.
Absolutely.
Which I think is like honorable on its own, right? I think movies themselves do take themselves a lot too, like way too seriously. And I think that's like when I made my movie, my video Movies Aren't Fun Anymore. Like I was talking about one of this guy's later movies, his movie called Frankie Freako, which, yeah, I don't see sets where I'm like, they must have had a good ass time making that shit very often, you know?
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I think it's really cool. And that's, I reached out to Stephen Kostanski. I'm trying to find his email, but I'd love to get him on just cause like, I want to talk about like his process and like what, cause I don't know, like it, I don't even know what I would do to like sit down and write a script like this and be like, I'm making this movie. Like, that's crazy to me.
Gore, man.
I mean, my goal when I'm watching a movie isn't to like look at the movie and be like, wow, they must have had fun. I want to have fun watching it, you know? Like, sure, they had fun, but they're not doing anything to make me have fun. It's just like,
I feel like they did, though. I feel like they tried.
They tried, and it's just not for me, you know? It's like this genre of film, this tone is like, it's like antimatter for me.
What's different from something like this and like, say, watching something like Spaceballs to you?
I haven't seen Spaceballs since I was a kid. I don't have context.
Yeah, scary movie. A parody film.
I don't like the scary movie films either. I liked them when I was a kid. But
problem.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not really big into like spoofs and shit. I don't know. I like satires. I don't really like spoofs that much.
We'll get more into that with Mickey 17 because that's very much a satirical.
So when it comes
film.
To comedy, what do you like? Like, what is like? Do you just?
I mean, we like a lot of the same comedy films. I like a lot of the Judd Apatow movies. I really liked when I was growing up. I mean, Mickey 17 is a comedy film that I liked.
Scott Pilgrim too much for you?
No, I like Scott Pilgrim.
Because that's pretty absurdist, but it's also just a genuinely well written comedy.
Yeah, it's Scott Pilgrim isn't schlock, you know. This is total schlock to me. Which it's just like it. It's just not something that really that agrees with me. You know, I start watching this movie, and yeah, I guess maybe it does remind me of like TV shows that I watched when I was a kid, and I was just like, I don't know, I couldn't really force myself to care. You know,
you're lactose intolerant, and this is dairy. That's what we've learned.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I love this movie.
Yeah, tell us.
But I mean, there's not much to say. I mean, I feel like the premise is pretty straightforward. If you want to watch some monster just torturing this small town under the rule of a tiny little girl who's cringe as fuck, then go watch it. Go watch this film.
Exactly. Really, but that's the point. Funny. It's like, there's not much to say. So why do we do, like, why do we talk about movies like this on the podcast?
I think there's,
like,
more to say.
I'm not going to like it. You're going to be like, it's fun. But if you think it's fun, what else is there to say about it? You know, that's why
I think
it's like,
I think if there were parts that you actually genuinely liked, there'd be more to talk about. But I think the fact that it's just so not for you, that it makes it like hard. Like, I don't want to just sit here and say, I love this part, I love this part, I love this part by myself. Like, that's kind of weird.
I enjoyed the bathroom bit where he's like, Psycho Gorman's dying out in the woods and he's like, I need your help. Come help me. And then he leaves. He's like, where? And then he just comes back. What the fuck did he say? He's like, I'm on this street and this corner. I don't know where that is.
I think the comedic timing was great in the film. I genuinely do think, like, the performances were pretty good for a movie this size. Like, I think the dad is great. He was pretty good. I think the wife, the mom, wasn't the best. I think the little girl did a good job. I think the direction was good. I mean, it's a solid movie. I don't know.
I did think the dad was funny. The dad was, like, my favorite part about the movie, actually.
I was thinking, I was like, when I started watching it before the dad got much weirder, I was like, you know, I can see Nick being like this in like 30 years.
Which
is so funny. You're kind of right. He does slowly become more and more useless. Like, at the beginning, he's like trying to talk his way out of filling the hole.
Yeah.
Thanks. So I'm the useless dad in 30 years?
Not even like his personality, just like the way he sounded. I was like, I can see Nick being like this.
Just like a total pushover bitch husband. God damn.
I don't know. It's okay. We can skip past it if y'all really didn't like it. But I'm gonna get something weird that you like eventually.
Wait, let's all right. So if that's all, what are our ratings?
I was gonna get to that, yeah.
3 out of 10.
10 out of 10 from Culture Nick.
3 or 4 out of 10.
I'm right there with you. I gave it a 4 out of 10, but I gave it a heart, so I liked it.
I will say I'd
watch it again with friends.
It more than that Christmas movie you recommended, for
sure.
Oh,
it's Silent Night, Deadly Night.
I hated that movie, but I at least like chuckled sometimes with this. So
yeah, there were a handful of jokes that worked for this.
Yeah.
Whereas that one,
I give this movie.
Yeah.
I give this movie a 9. I love it.
Okay, so let's talk about the new Bong Joon-ho movie, Mickey 17. Nick, you're doing a video on like his whole filmography, right?
I put it on the back burner, but I'm working on it. I'm about to do a video on adventure movies.
So when I was watching this, I was thinking, like, do you think is Parasite a like an outlier in his filmography? Because I was thinking about this movie, the tone of this, and then stuff like Okja. I mean, I guess Snowpiercer is more of like a serious drama like Parasite, but like
I did just watch all of his movies.
He tends to like these like satirical, almost like creature feature-y, like don't take themselves that seriously type of movies, you know. So
yeah, it's Okja, Mickey 17, and Snowpiercer all have a very similar tone and aesthetic.
Yeah.
I was kind of having a similar thought when I went and watched Memories of Murder, and I watched Barking Dogs Don't Bite, his first two movies.
Mm-hmm.
And Barking Dogs Don't Bite, I genuinely didn't really like very much. I mean, it was well shot. It was okay, like nice performances. It was just like a story that didn't really resonate with me too much. Memories of Murder, I also wasn't as big of a fan as I expected to be because I've heard so many good things about it. I do think it's a bit of an outlier, but I also think that he's a very, very good director. So I think he's capable of more movies like Parasite. It's just going to kind of depend on him having the inspiration of a story that he can direct well enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen his... I've only seen Parasite and then Snowpiercer and now Mickey 17, but it feels like he has a very clear separation for the types of stories and the way he directs films for his American focused films versus his South Korean focused films. And I saw someone say that it's almost like the movies are kind of talking down to us, like Snowpiercer, not as much as Mickey 17, but it feels a little condescending in a way. Like, it's like, eh, American audiences are kind of stupid, so we got to explain everything. Did you guys feel that there was a lot of explaining things over and over again in Mickey 17?
The movie's biggest flaw, in my opinion, is the exposition, but I do think that that was very intentional, just based on the premise of the film. I think he did that specifically because it was trying to get the point across that each iteration of him was a different person. And once that's kind of more revealed, once they show Mickey 18, I think that's, you're supposed to have that, like, oh, I get why they were over explaining all of that now.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I don't know. Mostly I like this movie. I definitely didn't love it by any means, though. I think it just, it was, I got, after he put out Parasite, I think in my own head, I was like classifying Bong Joon-ho as a certain type of director that
one of the greats.
That maybe he isn't, then maybe it was like unfair to put him there because, you know, thinking back on his filmography, like, I think there are more Mickey 17s than there are Parasites. I mean, I don't know. Would you guys agree with that?
I just need to see more of his South Korean films.
Oh, okay. I don't agree. I really like this movie. I think that just even on like a visual level, it was so nice to walk in and see a movie that is a very, very CGI heavy movie and like a lot of like special effects, but it looked like a fucking real movie. Like, this movie looked so, 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 so nice. And
it did look good.
It felt I'm like one of those people that just hate modern things, I guess. I guess I'm just a fucking boomer at this point. But like walking in and just seeing a movie that like didn't make my eyes bleed, that was like as epic as this movie, was just so nice for me. Like, I think I went in at like the perfect time, but I really got a lot of this movie. It really was really enjoyable for me.
You really classify this as epic though, because it feels pretty, despite the sci-fi subject matter, like it's pretty small scale to me, you know.
I say epic in terms of like the amount being put into it, not necessarily the scope of the film.
Yeah, because the scope is quite small. I kind of was hoping the scope would be smaller after seeing the whole thing, because my main issue with this movie is it's like when you go to Chipotle or any kind of burrito place, you get a burrito and you get all these good ingredients, you get all these different diverse ingredients in there. And then you just keep adding stuff. And then when you try to fold the burrito starts bursting at the seams. That is this movie. I think there are way too many different ideas and none of them get enough attention on their own. Because you have this whole cloning plot and where that goes. And then the entire third of this movie becomes an Avatar kind of story where they're like, we got to save the aliens. And I don't think either were explored enough in an interesting way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, to me, like the focus of the satire for the beginning was clearly on, you know, a kind of like anti-capitalist comment about how human life is expendable in the face of, you know, scientific advancement or like, you know, the needs of a corporations to make use of like a labor force or whatever. So yeah, sure, that makes sense. But then, yeah, then when you start getting into the otherworldly element of I mean, they were like a hive mind, right? Those aliens, because they could like feel when one was getting hurt. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what brought it back to Okja for me. I guess that's a kind of a recurring theme in Bong Joon-ho's work. But yeah, it definitely did feel like those two plot elements were kind of disparate thematically, and I don't know if they were necessarily like serving each other all that well.
I think there's definitely elements that I like. It's not like Parasite where if I really tried, it's like hard for me to pick holes in the movie. Like, obviously, there's a lot of things that I could say are kind of like a missed opportunity in this movie. Like the chick that, not his girlfriend, but the other chick that was like into Mickey 17. I forgot her character name, but her character was completely pointless. There were a lot of characters that like just felt kind of pointless and could have just been kind of rolled into somebody else. It wasn't the cleanest script I've ever seen in my life. That's for sure. And I think if you really try to like poke holes in the actual commentary the film's trying to make, I think there's some issues there as well. So it's definitely not a perfect movie, but I mean, it's definitely miles better than most films coming out.
Yeah, I think so. But it's just, I don't know. It not everything felt like it was meshing together in a coherent way. It felt like there was a lot of disparate subplots and side characters all kind of drifting out. And by the time the movie actually ends, it's like we kind of rush to wrap all the things up, like with Steven Yeun's character. Like the movie ends and then they're like, oh, and him? Oh, and the guy that was going to kill him, he showed up, but don't worry, he got him. And then we're good. It just felt like, oh, okay. Hey, whatever you say.
Yeah. I did think it was funny how the loan shark ends up finding them, despite the fact that they're at planet. Light years away in some distant alien planet. He sends them a handwritten letter.
You also have to keep in mind that this is based on a book too, so it does have a lot of points that it's trying to hit from
I've
the actual novel as well.
There's differences though, because it's not there a direct are. Adaptation. The I'm not sure if it's an addition or a replacement, but the whole reason why multiples are not allowed in the movie is because there was a serial killer that had multiples. I saw that in the book. Multiples are not allowed because a guy just used multiples of himself to overthrow a planet colony. Like he just printed thousands of himself to overthrow.
I think they also
planet.
I think they also limited the time jump because I think he wanted to make it more closer to modern time.
Yeah, I mean,
oh, was it like a 21 something?
It takes place in like 2054.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he wanted to make it closer to near future, just probably for an aesthetical purpose.
Yeah.
It does not feel like it's 25 years in the future to me.
Yeah. I mean, anytime there's like cloning stuff and deep space travel, we're not going to have either of those things by 2054. That's only 20 years away or 30 years away at this point. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, the main thing I liked about the movie was Robert Pattinson's performance. I thought he was really, really exceptional in this role. I think
he's really good.
Like Leo in Killers of the Flower Moon, I think he plays a great dumbass, you know?
Yeah.
He's like, I don't know. I keep getting cloned and I die. It hurts every time. Like, it's just like.
I hate dying so much.
Yeah, he's great.
It's funny. He played Mickey 17, then he played fucking his Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah, he played Batman and then this little weasel.
Talk about range. That's a really good point. To be able to be the most emo fucking Batman Bruce Wayne ever and then to do this goofy ass role that displays a lot of range for sure.
I think he definitely elevated the film a lot. I think the movie without him would have been significantly worse. And I don't, like I've said this before, I don't like Mark Ruffalo. I don't think he's a very good actor. I think his like Jerry Seinfeld, Donald Trump impression was fucking dog shit. I think he was genuinely pretty bad in this movie.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah, I thought him and Tony Collette were fun. I mean, I know you hate Mark Ruffalo as a man too, as just the guy too. So.
I don't hate him as a man. I think he's annoying, but
that's a man.
I don't hate him as a man.
I hate his man.
No, I don't. No, I don't hate him. I just think he's a bit obnoxious. But that's different than hating him. Like Ari Aster, I hate. I don't hate Mark Ruffalo.
Wait, what? Real quick, we'll go back to Mickey 17 in a second. What did Mark Ruffalo specifically say that got you so anti-Ruffalo?
I actually don't even remember what it was.
He ruffled his feathers.
I remember him standing up at some rally and just sounding really pompous and like he was talking down to everybody in the audience. And I was just like, yeah, I hate this guy.
It's like an Adrian Brody Oscar speech type moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I wasn't crazy about this movie. It definitely didn't move me like anywhere near as much as Parasite did. I even like Snowpiercer considerably more than this movie.
I think so too, yeah.
Which
I'd probably put this on the same level as Snowpiercer for me.
Because Snowpiercer was like, you know, it's a very simple metaphor, but at least the movie, you know, it picks that metaphor, it uses it, it makes great effect out of it, and it works, you know. However kind of simplistic it is, it's really well done.
Where it fully explores that metaphor.
Yeah, this movie is kind of got its hands in too many pots, I think, generally. Yeah. But some great performances, still pretty funny, still, you know, nice to look at. So overall good.
I def I definitely thought I would like it more than I did, but I also wasn't dissatisfied with it when I left. So, I don't know. I mean, he's just such a good filmmaker, man. I wish the script was stronger. I really do. But, like, just on a visual level, what he's doing with $200 million actually looks like $200 million. And I wish some people would fucking take notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does look, it looks genuinely great. It's just all of my issues are, it's fully on the script. And just like Nick said, it's too many pies. There's too many different ideas. Because I think if you stripped down this story, get rid of the whole alien save the planet subplot and just turn it into a, what are the philosophical quandaries of cloning yourself and dying over and over again? How do you deal with that? How do you deal with confronting yourself? I think Bong Joon-ho could make a killer just this.
That's such a less fun movie, though. You could still make it a dark comedy. Like that's the same argument I have, like why I enjoy Psycho Gorman. It's like, sometimes they just want to make a movie that's actually enjoyable. Like, maybe these, like, themes and elements that y'all are, like, hyper-focusing on don't matter that much. Like, maybe this social commentary isn't that important to Bong Joon-ho.
I don't care about social... I mean, I don't think you can say that after he made Parasite, but...
Yeah.
But maybe it was important for that film, but maybe it doesn't matter as much in this film, you know? Like, that was obviously a very personal film to him.
He's clearly making social commentary. You can't say this film's just for fun when he's clearly making some very overt satirical, you know, jabs.
Yeah.
I guess so.
Like, he can have fun. That's... You can have fun and do that. You know, that's what he was trying to do. I just don't think it was successful.
This movie is definitely an attempt to do that, to have, like, a fun... It's sort of like The White Lotus, like a fun series about things too. You know, I think he accomplishes that. I just think it's trying to be about too many things. That's the only thing that I am not really feeling about it. He definitely is he a vegan or like an animal rights activist or something? Because I wouldn't be surprised to hear that, because it seems probably like a recurring theme in a lot of his movies. Like,
I haven't seen Okja, but that was always the impression I got from Okja's. Yeah. Trailers and stuff.
I definitely don't think that he's quite on that level everybody probably thinks he is necessarily, where like he's like some prestige filmmaker. Because I think Parasite is probably a perfect movie, I don't think I've gotten that from any of his other films.
Yeah. Yeah, this definitely it reminded me of an Okja, which I was just like kind of just okay on. I liked this movie more than that, because basically just because of Robert Pattinson, actually.
Yeah.
I like this movie significantly more than Okja.
Okja, what was it? It was a pig, right? That was the
pig. It's like a hippopotamus or something.
Giant hippo pig.
It was a hippopigamus?
Creature.
Yeah. Hippopigamus?
well,
I don't know.
Yeah. So wait, am I the one? Do I have to pick a movie to recommend for next week?
No.
Well, let's give our ratings.
Well, yeah, let's give our ratings first. I'm kind of shocked by us. We had four major topics and kind of blew through those kind of quick.
Yeah. We got through. Well, TV took us longer than everything.
That's
else.
True. We were talking about two full series. Actually, we have a guest next episode, everybody.
We don't have to do a recommendation next week.
We don't have a recommendation. And I'm next anyway, Nick, so wait your damn turn.
I don't think you are. I think it's me.
Really?
Right?
I'm pretty sure. What's our logo look like? I think
the last one we did was your pig movie where they were eating pig.
Killing
pigs. Putting bugs in pigs.
Damn, we're really organized, guys.
Yeah, the Upstream Color.
That was like six episodes ago.
All right, well,
anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll figure it out. We are having YouTuber/filmmaker on next episode, Jacob Ross. We're getting another mustache man on the pod. He has recommended 1973's Fantastic Planet, or La Planète Sauvage, directed by René Laloux. So if you do not want to be spoiled for Fantastic Planet, this is great, because I have a Criterion copy of this. Make sure to watch it before next episode.
Have you guys seen that movie?
Yeah.
No, I have a copy of it, though.
I have it on VHS. I've been wanting to watch it. So, and I've heard only good things.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really crazy movie. It's really cool animation.
Should you take some hallucinogenics before watching it?
No, I would not recommend that.
All right, do not take hallucinogenics.
It's kind of, it definitely is. It wouldn't be fun for me in particular to watch while tripping. It would put me in a dark place potentially. it kind of reminds me of like Annihilation. Do you guys ever see that? Not really, yeah. But just in terms of like making just like alien cosmic horror things just feel like very disgusting. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. And like mixing it with body horror, that kind of reminds me of Fantastic Planet a little bit.
Freaks you out a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we go, Can we do some like what do we think is going to happen with The Rock with his two big movies coming up? No, because he has a Scorsese movie coming up.
He has a Safdie Brothers movie coming up.
I think
it's a singular Safdie Brothers movie.
Do we think The Rock is on an upswing?
I mean, definitely.
I will have to see.
He's
trying at least.
It's inevitable, I think. You know, Safdie and Scorsese, that's a big 1-2 punch. I don't see how we can deny it at this point. The Rock's stonks are definitely going up in the cinephile circles.
What was it that he said about Red One?
Multiple verticals. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a foreshadowing.
I wonder, like, wouldn't it be crazy to see if The Rock did one of those roles, but he just like lost 50 pounds or something and made himself skinny.
Like Dave Bautista?
Yeah. What if I feel like that's what The Rock needs. He needs like a physicality change. He needs to stop being
He doesn't want to do that.
He will never
do that. He wants to be enormous. He wants to be a mountain.
But I think he's...
It's also... Keep in mind also, just like on a logistical level, like the only way he would get that muscle back is by hopping back on bigger cycles than he wants to do as an old man.
So he can't stop?
Well, like right now, he probably just has to take like testosterone replacement to like maintain his muscles. But if he like lost all that weight, he would actually have to like hop on an actual cycle just to like get that muscle back. And I doubt he wants to put that pressure on his heart.
Because Dave Bautista have you guys seen Dave Bautista recently?
Yeah.
He just lost like 50 pounds because he stopped doing all that. Because he was like, it's like messing me up. Because he is 56 years old and The Rock is 52. So I wouldn't be shocked if we, if this works for him and he's got this big cinephile career and people are starting to praise him a little more, he might be like, you know what? I don't need these guns.
Nick, who are like
time to put him to rest?
Is The Rock like the number one roided out actor?
Alan Richardson's pretty big.
The Rock. Who else? I mean, there's a bunch of them, but not a lot of like leading men these days. I feel like it's less common nowadays for the juiced boys.
Was Chris Evans juiced up? You think for Captain America?
Oh, maybe a little.
Minorly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Chris Hemsworth is 100% like juicy as fuck. You can see like as soon as he comes off of these. Well, not only that, but Chris Hemsworth was like in Thor Ragnarok. He was on juice and he was they used SF special effects to like actually increase his muscles. Like, do you see how gross he looked in that scene whenever he was getting his clothes torn off?
Oh, yeah. He's like bulbous.
He was like enhanced.
Damn, dude. I didn't realize that.
I know I already started the end of the episode, but fuck it. We're already in a separate discussion at this point. I'm curious how I think the conversation needs to be had about a massive amount of just straight up gaslighting and lying Hollywood does to the general public about how natural all these people are. Because they never admit to taking anything. The Rock still says he doesn't take anything. Chris Hemsworth is like, oh yeah, I just, you know, I have my wheat grass every morning.
Well, the reason Chris Hemsworth does it is because he has like an actual like app.
He has an app
for his workout routines. So if he does admit, then he's basically like risking his business. So I mean, for him it makes sense. But yeah, like there's like only a couple that I can think of that weren't taking anything. Like I think Henry Cavill definitely was natural. Yep.
You think he was natural?
Yeah, 100%.
Did you see?
Explain for us what are the markers? Like, how do you know?
We're two skinny boys, so we don't understand.
Okay, so a lot of it has to do with just like if you look at Henry Cavill, like first of all, it's rate of progression. So he's been slowly gaining size for years. Like, he hasn't just blown up overnight. Whenever he's off of a movie, he doesn't just instantly shrink down. That's a big thing. And also just like how lean he is. Whenever he was really big in Man of Steel, he wasn't very lean. He like had a visible six pack, but just barely. Like, he still had to, he couldn't just, like, if he lost all of his like fat, he would look a lot smaller. It's just the way his muscles look.
Is the, like, new, you don't see him like on roids. I just sent a photo to the group chat.
Let's see.
This was him after, this was like, I think after like 7 months of training, 8 months.
I mean, that's him with a pump. I mean, it'd be hard for me to guess. Do you have what he looked like before? If he was massively skinny before. I think he gained
20 or 30 pounds.
It's possible if he like hadn't really worked out before. It'd be hard to say from that picture.
40 pounds.
We should, this should be like a regular thing that we do, just called like analyzing the big boys, where we just like talk about muscles and how you get them.
I think Chris, fucking Star-Lord was his fucking name.
Pratt.
Chris Pratt was natural. 100%.
Yeah. I listened
what
to
about Kumail Nanjiani.
Oh, that's gotta be.
Oh, he's that's so juicy. Definite. He's so juicy.
And he was saying, he was also I have a lot of juicing. I do this thing where I put little, he does electrotherapy where he puts those on his muscles. That's how he gets so
buff. Well, I'm sure he does some of that stuff too, but like, it has nothing to do with how big he got. He was fucking massive, bro.
I mean, I think female celebrities are even worse about this stuff, like lying about the surgeries they get and stuff and just like ruining women's body perception.
Yeah, getting liposuction is like mega popular and nobody talks about it.
Lip fillers, cheek fillers, chin fillers, all of that.
Fat removal, chin implants, Giga Chad surgery, all this kind of stuff that people do.
Well, like I thought for whenever Zac Efron's stuff came out, I actually believe him about the jaw thing.
He had
his jaw
swelling and it broke. Yeah.
Well, no, he shattered his jaw and had to get surgery. But I mean, nobody's fucking natural in Hollywood. There's like very rare.
Which celebrity looks the most like handsome Squidward?
Kumail
Nanjiani.
Did y'all like his jawline is insane, bro. It's so square.
Yeah, it's his face shape changed so much when he got Marvel shredded.
Well, like it's just because he's like, it's your fat in your face. Like right now, my face is kind of fat because I'm overweight. But like, I mean, if I get skinny, like my jaw looks completely different.
I think no, he looks like he gained. Either got like implants or something, or also was like working out his mouth with like jaws or size or something. Cause he got like two Matt. Have you guys heard? Do you guys know what jaws or size is? It's like it's a ball that you put in your mouth and just go.
It doesn't actually do anything.
It's so supposed like to like gag. Work out your TMJ shit or something. I don't know. Make your jaw look
so
better.
it's like mewing.
Yeah, but yeah. It's like super mewing.
It doesn't do anything, but like I think people don't realize how much like the fat in your face changes your face shape. It's pretty significant.
Yeah. It's like how Alec Baldwin continues to look rounder and rounder as he ages.
Yeah. He's turning into a sphere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He looks fucking wild.
He's
spherical. It's interesting because I think there was a lot of controversy when the Batman was filming because Robert Pattinson made a joke about not wanting to work out. Like he's like, I just don't want to. And I saw some people thinking he was more hinting that he didn't want to take steroids because he is very natural in that movie. Like he put on like 15 pounds of muscle, but he's not huge. He's like a very normally fit guy, but that's kind of it. He's not crazy. He's not Christian Bale size even.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's funny that people are getting so mad about that.
Which I mean, Nick got mad about it. Nick wants a gigantic Batman.
I think he looks great slim Batman.
I think he's fine. I don't have a problem. Just because he's so good, like his performance is so good, I can overlook it, right? But I would prefer a Batman with some size. But just in the DCU, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
Where it's more like comic booky and silly. I don't know. I don't really have a problem with celebrities like using drugs to do whatever to like make the part work, you know? I just think that they shouldn't be so hidden about it.
Just be honest.
I think hiding those things from the public, like the public who already has such a low opinion of themselves a lot of the time, is just really like shitty thing to do.
Well, I listened to like one of these guys who's like a nutritionist or plastic surgeon to the stars or whatever. They were interviewing him about which Marvel actors or just like action stars have taken steroids, and he was like adamant that Chris Hemsworth has never taken steroids. But you disagree with that.
I mean, he 100% has. Like, I would bet my life on it.
Maybe this was before Love and Thunder. I don't know.
He's always been
huge,
bro.
He was, when for the first Thor, he was huge.
Literally, look at pictures of him whenever he's just like paparazzi pictures of him. You don't go from that. You don't go from that skinny to that big over the course of 3 months, which he does over and over and over regularly.
Yeah,
it just doesn't happen. The same with Hugh Jackman. You don't get bigger and bigger and bigger into your 60s. Like, that doesn't fucking happen.
Something, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, people think it's natural because he just, you know, that's the,
he doesn't get that big. That's the thing. He's not like fucking bodybuilder size, right? So people are like, that's natural. It's like, no, you don't get that fucking lean.
No.
And that big at 60 years old, whenever your entire life you've been just a tall string bean. It doesn't fucking work.
All right. Yeah. Well,
our weekly check-in with the muscle boys.
Yeah. We'll make it a recurring thing. We could talk about muscles more often, I think.
But yeah, close us out. I'm so excited for Jacob Ross. Everybody, let us know if there's anybody y'all want us to interview, because I would love to get more people on here and just have cool conversations.
Yeah, let us know. Let me do a quick rundown of what we already talked about. Next episode, Jacob Ross, Fantastic Planet, 1973. If you enjoyed this video and you're listening to it on YouTube or watching it on YouTube, please leave a like and comment. Same goes for our audio platforms, being Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And make sure you watch Fantastic Planet so you're not spoiled for next episode. Thank you all for watching very much. And get Stuckmanized, everybody.
Get Stuckmanized.
Get Stuckmanized. Get Stuckmanized. Also, new episodes every Tuesday. We need to start saying that.
Yes, new episodes Tuesday.
Bye-bye.
Bye.